The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Good afternoon. This is America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. Unfortunately, for all of you listeners out there, I am not Father Matt Malone. My name is Father Patty Gilger. I'm happy to welcome you to our show this week, and I'm joined by Kevin Clark, who is our chief correspondent. Kevin, welcome.
Yes, and I am not Carrie Weber.
Well, too
so
bad.
I can almost hear the dial spinning away as people discover that Matt and Carrie are not here.
I miss Carrie and Matt both, but we're really happy to have you here.
We will do our best, and as Matt and Carrie do each week, we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by the Crack team at America Magazine, the Crack editorial team.
And one of the key members of our Crack editorial team, we're joined by Vivian Cabrera. Vivian is the editorial assistant for digital media. Vivian, we're really happy to have you here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
And we have a really interesting article called How to Choose the Right Godparent by the wonderful Simca Fisher. Simca is a speaker, freelance writer, and author of the book The Sinner's Guide to Natural Family Planning. She blogs daily at simcafisher.com, and she joins us now. Simca, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
This is a really beautiful piece that you've written, you know, filled with lots of like details and insights about different cultural practices. How did this idea of this come to you, and what were you hoping to communicate in the piece?
Yeah, well, full disclosure, I didn't think of it myself. The editors of America proposed the idea.
So your godparents at America Magazine.
I thought it was a great idea because I know that it's something that every Catholic has a godparent, and many, many Catholics are godparents. And yet it's one of those things where hardly anything is known about it, and people have very strong opinions about it. And it's one of those places where it's sort of like everybody has this common experience, and yet the actual lived experiences of it vary so very, very widely from different cultures and different generations and different, different areas of the country and everything. So I started to talk to some people, some of my many Catholic friends, and sure enough, it was a very, very broad range of experiences centering on the godparenting experience. So it was interesting.
What did you see that was similar across cultures regarding the choice? I mean, is that the beginning of the similarities? Do parents agonize a lot about these, or were they more like me? I had so many siblings to choose from. It basically was, well, I know Andy, my older brother, gets top billing for the first child, and then I sort of worked my way down through my other siblings.
Right.
Sort of the default godparent thing.
Yeah, for a lot of people, it is mainly about an honor that you're bestowing on the godparent rather than what you think the godparent can offer to the child who's being baptized. And, in some cultures, that's a very, very strong thing. In Hispanic cultures, that seems to be one of the women that I interviewed, Letitia Adams, said that it's almost the same as asking somebody to walk you down the aisle. You know, and you're almost asking them to be part of your family. So it's somebody that you want to think very hard about. And it's also, in many cases, somebody that the rest of your family is going to pressure you to choose this person. That's something that I actually heard a lot. Your mother and your grandmother and all your aunts and uncles maybe more aunts than uncles, are pressuring you to choose.
As a Latina, I can confirm this is all true when it comes to this person is adopted into your family. And you have a really good story of Ruby, who was the godparent for Barbara Dawson's daughter, I believe.
Right.
And how the family's like, great, now you are a part of our family.
That means you have to show up at every family event. But then
they also, like, godparents also shower you with gifts because they, like, really kind of like, you are my child. Like, you are finally my godchild. And there is definitely that pressure of, like, who are you going to choose? But in the same way that non-Hispanic Catholics are taken aback by how warm Hispanic cultures are, I found it was the same kind of opposite. Like, when I didn't know that there was a difference between a godparent and a sponsor, which you mentioned in your piece about the confirmation sponsor versus the godparent you get when you're baptized.
Right. I mean, in many cultures, that's going to be a different person. And in many cases, it's the when the child is confirmed, I mean, this is changing in a lot of dioceses when they're moving the age of confirmation to a younger age. Mm-hmm. But as it is now in many places, you're a teenager when you choose a confirmation, when you're confirmed and you choose a confirmation sponsor. So it's sort of your opportunity to pick somebody. If the godparents were duds, as often happens. Mm-hmm.
Oh, like, man, that's too close to home for me.
Yeah.
I'm a dud. I'm a godfather to about four kids. And if it weren't for my wife, she thinks of all their birthdays at least. But so they do get a Christmas gift and a birthday gift from me, courtesy of my wife's superior planning skills. But the other role of the godparent as being sort of like the backup spiritual guide, I really feel like I have been an abject failure at. Even when I was in Jerusalem, I bought rosaries for all of my godchildren. I was so pleased with myself. I brought them home and I said, when they each get their communion, I'm going to mail this to them with a loving little note from Uncle Kevin. And you know, all of those rosaries are sitting in a closet somewhere in my
I never fully confess.
I've
got to break them out someday. I also was supposed to give them to my children. I guess I failed both as a parent and a godparent.
Not true. Or only partially so.
Thank you.
Holy and sinful.
So Cinque, did you experience that where the spiritual role in some cultures was much more pronounced and it was more of an honorific in others?
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. I mean, in the cultures where it was a big where you had to supply everything at the party and it was a big deal and it was a big honor and everything, there seemed like there was actually less emphasis on the cultural component of it. Whereas in some cultures where there wasn't a lot of fuss built up around it, yeah, the spiritual component seemed like it was more pronounced. I mean, what happens, unfortunately, most of the time, I talked to a couple of women who had been involved in faith formation and religious education, and they were the ones who tried to tell parents, oh, you want to baptize your baby? Okay, here's the guidelines for who you can choose as godparent. And not only could the parents not think of a single person, told me this, that they couldn't think of a single person, much less two people, who fulfilled those
criteria.
Yeah.
Requirements.
But the parents themselves were just behind practicing, and they were showing up at the church because, well, we want to have a picture of the baby in a frilly dress, and this seems like a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting because it was that you think of godparents as being there to offer something to the godchildren, and obviously that is what you're supposed to do. But there's also mm-hmm. this aspect where it works in the other direction, where the opportunity to become a godparent and to choose a godparent brings the adults closer to God and closer to the church and educates them and motivates them to become more involved in their own spiritual life as well as the spiritual life of the child. So in an age when people are very, you know, 80% of the people reading Maya Diocesan magazine don't go to Mass every week, for instance. So mm-hmm. they're just not all that heavily involved. So the task of choosing a godparent and the obligation or the honor of becoming a godparent is an opportunity for those people to become closer to the church rather than the other way around, rather than them being guides and, a sponsor, which is what they properly are.
Well, that's, and I think I've experienced some of that with my family, trying to find a sponsor, well, for confirmation, and getting people reconnected through the baptism of a child.
There's a really interesting portion in the beginning of your article where you talk about a common misunderstanding a lot of people have, which I definitely did not know this, but people assume that godparent is the same as legal guardian, and that's not the case, which I was quite shocked to find out.
This is true for your family or your experience, that the godparent is like a legal guardian as well as a religious figure.
Exactly. My godparent is my mom's sister, and I always assumed if anything happened to my parents, then my aunt would take care of me. And oh God, that's not true. Okay, could you speak a little bit about that? I'm sure that a lot of people must find that shocking.
Yeah, I mean, that would be especially shocking if it was a matter of two different cultures coming together and one family had that expectation mm-hmm. and the godparent had no idea that was what was expected.
It's important to talk about these things a little bit first.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. It's so difficult. Everybody is so busy, and you know, the church wants you to show up at this ceremony and says, kind of springs this question on you: are you prepared to? What's the actual wording of it? Are you ready to help the parents of this child in their duty as Christian parents? And you say, mm-hmm. yes. You know, I'm the godparent to a number of different babies. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember anybody ever telling me exactly what that meant.
Yeah. Or if you're expected to fill in if something happens to the actual parents.
Right. I mean, that's something that obviously that, you know, it would be the responsibility of the parents to talk to the godparents about what they're actually expecting. But I don't know. I think it would probably be helpful for in religious education classes to bring that up specifically to make sure there's no misunderstanding.
You know,
because it does seem like a common misunderstanding that this is not only the expectation between them, but that there's actually some kind of legal that actually has some kind of legal heft, and it absolutely does not.
So, Simca, with regard to your own experience of being a godmother or in choosing yeah. godparents for your own children, what skills have you looked for, or what skills do you feel like you've needed or that you want to cultivate to really be a good example in the faith? Like, you know, are you ready to help the parents of this child in their duty as Christian parents? Like, how do you want to help them, or what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I may be absolutely the worst godmother in the world. I'm really
there's so much competition for that, though.
when I heard the assignment from my editor, I was like, oh no.
See, this is the Holy Spirit reaching out to you to get you back on the job.
Yeah, probably. I mean, and I do feel like whatever else a godparent might choose to do, the very baseline, and it's not only the minimum, but actually the most important part of it, is to pray for your godchildren. And that's something that I do. So I do that anyway. And it's kind of funny. We talk about, you know, our failures, and I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that. But we forget that the invisible work of prayer and the invisible work of grace is really about 80% of our lives, and we just don't realize it because we're sort of scurrying around on the surface, getting busy, and, you know, buying groceries and picking out outfits and having parties and, you know, trying to give each other advice and feeling guilty and everything. And meanwhile, there's this whole sort of undercurrent of spiritual action going on that we don't even know about and we forget about, but it's real. It's absolutely real. And really, at least this is what I tell myself,
yeah.
really the main job of a godparent is to pray for your godchild and to have faith that this is not just ordinary prayer. This is prayer that has to do with the sacrament, which is one of the main, you know, influxes of grace that the Holy Spirit has opened up for us.
So there is still hope for me. I could still become good. I could still become a better godparent. It's very reassuring.
I mean, that is what I would want. That is what I hope that that the godparents of my children do. I hope they pray for them, because honestly, the older I get, it's one of those things, the more I realize how extremely important and valuable it is to have somebody praying for you specifically, intentionally, by name, regularly. It's really, there's nothing else as effective as that.
Yeah, Simca, it's beautiful, and it is really important. One of the things that you mentioned in the piece that I think supplements this practice of prayer that we're talking about here, you describe one young woman who calls her granddaughter's godmother, one grandparent who calls the granddaughter's godmother the ultimate godparent, by not only bringing Christmas and birthday presents, but walking with her goddaughter through the Stations of the Cross and praying the rosary for her every day. So what really struck me about that is the idea in there that this godparent is teaching their godchild how to walk the Stations of the Cross, and maybe even yeah. how to pray the rosary. So, I mean, I'm thinking about this for my own godchildren. And I, you know, look, in some ways I have this incredible built-in advantage where, as a priest, like, I can show up at their house and like, oh, let's do something explicitly religious. It's called Mass, you know, and we're just going to do this in the house here.
That's tough to compete with.
It's great. But I think that there's so many of these important cultural practices mm-hmm. that are deeply embedded in the faith that we can pass on, that we as godparents should take on the responsibility to pass on in some ways.
And parents, every parent I know would be extremely grateful to have some help with that, because there's so many responsibilities you have as a parent. And sometimes, I mean, I have 10 children, and sometimes I forget to do any kind of religious education for kind of a long time. And if I had some,
you get a free pass for me for anything after that sentence. 10 children.
And have you noticed when there are a lot of children involved that the desire for a good godparent kind of, like, the more along you go and, like, oh, now it's my fourth child who needs a godparent, like, that you want someone who's a little more experienced or whatnot? At least in my experience, my brother, who's younger than me, my parents maybe thought about it a little more than with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's something that one of Amy Ekblad that I interviewed, she has, how many, I think she has 13 children, 14 children. And she said for the first several children, she was just basically picking her buddies. That was, right. You know, she just didn't take it seriously at all. And then as she got older and she experienced a reversion to the faith, and she did begin to take it more seriously, and she did begin to, and I think she said that she even paired up at least one of her children. So one of her older children was the godfather for the younger child.
Oh, that's a beautiful
within
story.
The same family, yeah. And they have a very close relationship, and the older child takes it seriously that it's his job to help educate the younger sibling, which also, of course, enhances his own faith.
Exactly. Now, I always find
the best way to learn something is to teach it, right?
Exactly right. No, I always find myself, like, in teaching or dealing with young people, that taking them more seriously, like putting the expectations, not sky high, but higher, they really respond. That's really edifying for me to hear that. Mm-hmm. Look, Simca, this is wonderful to speak with you and wonderful to learn a little bit about what you've learned about how to choose the right godparent and what you're looking for and the kinds of skills there. We want to thank you for joining us once again, as you regularly do here on America This Week.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful, Simca. I really loved that conversation.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And it's a great piece. And you can find it, I think it's called... How to Choose the Right Godparent at americamedia.org. Yeah.
It was so straightforward, you couldn't think of the title.
Well, and I think listening to you a little bit, Vivian, about your experience of being shocked a little bit by this, whereas for me, I feel like, to be honest, I don't even know my godparents. I think I met them when I was a kid, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a generational thing. I think modern life presents new challenges to that, to this custom of godparenting.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I have brothers who live in different, I have a sister who lives in a different state, a brother who lives in Singapore. Mm. I'm godparent to children in five different states, really, I think, when I, yeah. So it's not like we're all in the same village anymore where we all get together. Yeah.
No, living in this dispersed world is really challenging. One of the things that Simca mentions in there, she quotes the Catechism of the Church as reminding us that, quote, faith needs a community of believers. And godparents are right at the heart of that. I know I need a community of believers. That literally is what the Society of Jesus is for me. Yeah. So I need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we have to try and, instead of fight the modern era, maybe try to use the tools at our disposal to create that family community of godparents and their children via, I don't know, Facebook or FaceTime. Yeah. Not that I want to give Facebook a plug anymore. Yeah. I think they're doing okay. Yeah, they don't need any help from us.
No, but we do want to use those things, and we want to thank you through this digital media that you're listening to us over right now for being here with us this week. This has been America This Week. I've been joined by Vivian Cabrera and Kevin Clark. Thank you for being with us. We will see you in a week.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.